Soledad O'Brien isn't just one of the most respected and important journalists in the world. She's also affected my life directly through one of her stories. I can't wait to tell you all about it. Plus, her connection to the special needs community isn't just important to her, it's personal. And you're going to hear all about it today on Driven by Purpose.
This is Driven by Purpose, a show about finding your purpose, building fulfilling careers, and helping people with disabilities live better lives. Hosted by three men who've lived it and are here to help you do the same. Special thanks to our presenting sponsor, Clean Logic, a leading bath and skincare company and a true pioneer in creating inclusive workplaces and increasing employment opportunities for people with disabilities.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Driven by Purpose. My name is Evan Rosenblum, along with the co-founder of Clean Logic and the Inspiration Foundation, Isaac Spiro. What's going on, Isaac?
Good to see you, Evan.
Enough about you, because we got a legend on the program today. One of the, honestly, somebody who has been not only an inspiration for me, but somebody who is an icon in the world of journalism, Soledad O'Brien. Soledad, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
It is my pleasure. Although legends start sounding a little old,
I know,
don't you think?
You're right. But you have been an inspiration for me.
We were just talking
about this off camera, but I feel like it's important to talk about it too. My daughter is going to be 10 years old and she has cerebral palsy. She has brain damage. She can't walk, nonverbal, all that stuff. But when she was born, something came to mind, a story that you did when you were at Real Sports, and it was about Rick and Dick Hoyt, the father-son who the son had cerebral palsy and he was in a chair, and the father just had this feeling that the son wanted to do these races and got a running chair, and they took off and became legends. And they did, how many times did they do the Boston Marathon? Like a dozen?
Oh gosh, more. It had to be. We should Google that. It's got to be at least, because I covered that story when I worked in local news in Boston and then again at Real Sports, which was at least 20 years later. Like they've done it for many, many years. We'll have to Google that.
But I remember that story so vividly. And when my daughter was born and it started to kind of dawn on me that she was going to have cerebral palsy and that she was going to have some limitations and disabilities, I remember turning to one of my closest friends, my friend Luke, who's from that area over there. And I said to him, we're going to be Rick and Dick Hoyt.
Yeah.
And he was like, all right, sure. Whatever you say, bud. But we did. We ended up starting the Sydney Strong Run Club because I was inspired by that story that you produced, that you were such a part of. And so I just want to start off this show by just saying thank you. The journalism and the work that you do is so important on so many levels. But, you know, when you always say you've done, you know, Hurricane Katrina and you did things in Haiti and you've covered so many important stories, that story has been so impactful to me and it has changed my life and it has inspired me. And I just want to start off the show by just saying thank you. And
I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Thank you. Yeah, that family, I'm reading 32 Boston marathons and 32. 72 marathons in total.
My goodness.
Evan, you got some work to do, Evan. Come on, catch up.
I'm trying, man. I was just saying, my daughter and I ran the Calabasas Classic over the weekend and she was screaming at me to go faster. And I'm like, I'm doing the best I can. I'm so sorry. One of the most fascinating parts of that story, I don't know if you remember this, the way I do, when the son got a talking device, one of the first thing, I think the first thing he said to his father was, let's go on a run.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he just talked about how much he enjoyed that time and how much he enjoyed running. And that has always just stuck with me. And when Sydney, my daughter, has a talking device and she uses it to tell me to go faster and stuff like that. But I just think about that. Like, I'm so grateful because I don't know if I would have approached it the same way had it not been for those two in that story. And it's just had such a tremendous impact on our lives and our relationship. And we love working out together and we love going on runs and we bring other people into the group. And it's just, it's been great. And again, I know I'm babbling on this, but thank you so much.
No, I remember when the Hoyts started, you know, they would talk about how there were people who sort of were like, why? Yeah. What is this? What is your child getting out of this even? And, you know, and then you realize a ton. And the relationship is getting a ton out of it. So yeah, they really are the inspiration. Fantastic story and absolutely worth doing.
Yeah. So I, you know, you've been involved in this community, special needs, people called special needs community, other people call it community, people with disabilities, for a very long time. I know that you connected with Isaac and Clean Logic years ago. And I'm just curious, like, how did you guys connect and what was the point that like brought you guys together? Why are you so passionate about this?
I remember, Isaac, you don't have to keep me honest on this, because I remember we were on a flight together and we started just chatting. And which I think for people who travel, it's like, oh God, that sounds terrible. The person next to you was talking. Oh no. But we had a great conversation and I can't remember like how, what came out of that, except I remember, I think we were talking about communication, like how do you tell your story, if I'm not mistaken. And I was like, well, all right, let's just keep in touch and keep talking about it. And then that just developed into what was an amazing event. And already all the hard work was done. I mean, it was great to have an opportunity to go really tour the facility and see the work happening, of course, you know, and not only because I'm friends with Isaac, but because I have bought a lot of Clean Logic stuff before I even knew you. Isaac existed. So, you know, it's just amazing to actually see where it sort of starts, where it comes from. And I think I always get very, it's very easy to be passionate when you're working with people who are passionate, right? You just kind of go for the ride. It's not hard at all. And so I've been really lucky because I sort of tend to seek out people who just are really into what they're doing and have a lot of purpose, right? And really want to get stuff done in their lifetime. And then I become that annoying person on the plane who will chat with you.
No,
he did not put his headphones in. That's to my defense.
Well, we were already talking and about, hey, we're going to Florida where she lives, and I'm going to a trade show and telling her about the products. And, you know, obviously I talk more about the purpose and the products. And as Soledad was talking and about her experience, she was like, I'm a journalist. And I still didn't know who I was sitting next to. And I'm like, okay. And it was towards the end, I introduced myself and it was, hey, I'm Soledad. And it was just great because we really did talk a lot about purpose. And, you know, Soledad, I would love for you to even touch just a little bit on your personal story, you know, with your son, because I didn't know that before. So I thought, you know, just, you know, us having that personal connection around, you know, disabilities and wanting to, you know, do more to help the world, even though you do so much more than just disability with your work. I'd love for you to talk about that.
It's so crazy how I think most people don't even think about disability until disability comes and knocks on their door, right?
Yep.
Like I have never, as a reporter, and this is, I think I'm going on my 40th year, never once before I had a child who had severe hearing issues, I had never once thought about how do people in New Orleans, when I'm telling them that there's a hurricane and I'm standing out in the wind, like, how are they getting this information? I didn't even think about it. How are they getting evacuated, right? All the things that actually you have to think about when you have a child who has a disability. What do you do when you can't comply with the police? Right. Because I have a son who really can't hear what people say, and certainly not when he's, you know, a little bit stressed out. So it wasn't until Jackson was diagnosed with very severe hearing issues that I really started to think about it. And, you know, again, I think what was interesting to me, especially in his school, he went to a school in New York City for really kindergarten through elementary school, how much so many things that can help people who are disabled are also additive for everybody else, right? Sometimes it seems like it's this giant effort, but, you know, for example, they would say, and he had a really great aide who was helping him, but the teacher loved to yell out, don't forget to read chapter 3 and 4 for tomorrow, you know, and like write it on the board. That will not only help my kid who will not hear at all when you yell out the chapter 3 and 4, but it'll help all those other kids who don't necessarily catch things the first go around, you know, really ascending clips ahead of time. You know, Jackson used to play all the clips. Teacher would send him the clips and then he'd play them over and over and over until he really understood, so that when that clip was playing in the classroom, you know, he had heard it now for the 10th time and knew exactly what the context was because he missed a lot of context. Also great for every other kid who won't necessarily focus and hear it the first go round. And I was always surprised at just how much work it took to get people on board with something that I thought would just be kind of helpful for everybody.
Right.
And so that was a little bit frustrating. But anytime I think you can figure out how to just make life easier and give people purpose again in their work, like that's everything, right? That's why we're on this planet.
So going off of that, you know, your career, you one of the most high profile journalists on the planet. I mean, I remember watching you, like we were talking about, you know, Katrina and Haiti and all the other things, CNN. How, when you realized that your son had a disability and he was going to require more attention than a typical kid, how did that affect your career trajectory and your plans?
You know, it didn't very much at all. I was very lucky. My husband and I were very much on board with kind of how we would deal with it. I remember when he was first diagnosed, the doctor called us and said, I need you guys to come into the office. My husband Brad traveled a lot. I'm like, absolutely not. Just tell us what is happening. You know, this idea of like a sit down. We just didn't have that kind of life. And I was, we were both so relieved when we understood what we were dealing with. I felt, and I was so glad that Brad was too. We're like, okay, whew, now we know where to begin, right? How can you help someone if you can't figure out what the issue is?
Right. And now, Soledad, was your son, at what age was he diagnosed?
He was seven, first grade. So it didn't change my career plans a lot, but it was an interesting dynamic in the family. You know, even to this day, now that kid is 20 years old, my other kids, I have three others, would talk about how I used to always hold his hand when we do. And, you know, and I was doing the pin him down because he was a kid before he was diagnosed. He'd have rolling meltdowns, meltdown right. after meltdown. He had an open wound on his head because he would slam his head into a wall. When he could finally articulate the issue, he'd say, I just hear in my head. Well, of course, it's going to drive you insane.
Yeah.
So it was that was a dynamic of like what you guys think is me, you know, always choosing to hold his hand is me actually being like, I got him. I'm going to be able to talk him out of this meltdown that will become 20 meltdowns before the day is out.
When he had the diagnosis and you guys were you guys got more information, did it affect you in terms of, I know it didn't affect your career trajectory and stuff like that, but did it impact you in terms of like the kinds of stories you wanted to cover, the kinds of content you wanted to produce, anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Again, it's like somebody, it reminds me of when you have kids in the first place, right? And it's almost like somebody walks over to your television set and says, you know, this TV comes in color too, right? And they're like, oh my God, I have kids now. And I didn't realize I had a color TV.
Right.
The world is the same, but it's so much more. And I think it's the same thing when you have a kid who's dealing with something, right? You're always thinking about it. And that means you start considering the people who are not kind of the mainstream all the time.
Right.
Like, how will people get this information? How are communities dealing with this? What is the story of this thing over here that other people aren't covering? I mean, let's be real. The news doesn't spend a lot of time covering people who are disabled, honestly. I think sometimes there's like the heroic story, but outside of that, like as regular people doing things, accomplishing things, you know, we don't really cover those stories. And so, yeah, absolutely. It just kind of opens a window of like, oh, there's a whole other world that I haven't considered for telling stories.
Yeah. I know for me, I just felt like when my daughter was born, she spent 143 days in the NICU. Mm. And me as a father, I had no idea where to turn. Because I always tell people like, you know, no one plans on having a kid with disabilities. It just happens to you. And then you got to kind of figure it out. You got to figure out where to get resources, where to get information, who to turn to find things like your therapist, occupational therapist, the right doctors, the right neurologist, stuff like that. And you don't know where to go. And so like, I've always felt like since that, when my daughter got out of the NICU, I've felt this kind of desire to, you know, use whatever platform I could get to try to help other people that followed me to be like, I don't want you to be as lost as I was. I want to try to help you, you know, find the answers and connect you to the information. And that's the kind of what happened with me. And, you know, that's how we got here to this moment right now. And I'm so, you know, part of our mission with this show is to almost normalize people with disabilities in a way where the people don't feel awkward. you know, asking, talking about things that you may have felt taboo before.
Right.
Because it hurts people. It gets in the way of trying to get that information that could have a real positive impact on real families. And
yeah.
You see it in all the reporting that you've done over the years. I'm sure, speaking of that, I'm wondering if there is a story that you did in your career that at the time maybe didn't have a huge impact, but then after your son was born and after you became a parent, you kind of went back and thought about, and it...
Every story. Listen, yeah. I don't know how... I used to think when you have a terrible tragedy, like something terrible happens to a child. We could look, for example, at this awful tragedy in Texas, right? Where children are washed.
Horrible.
I remember thinking, right? Every human being would say, oh my God, that is just horrific.
Yeah.
When you have a child, you think, I don't know how those parents are standing upright today, right? It's just, again, it's like it opens your vision. And so every time I knew clearly anything terrible happening with a child was awful. But the minute you have a child, you really just start feeling, I don't know how these parents are doing it. I don't understand how they're moving forward. And I think you're right. I think, like, why does everybody have to reinvent the wheel? Wouldn't it be amazing to have a really good resource or the ability just to ask questions? At one point, we had pretty good resources for Jackson. And at one point, he was invited to come in and chat with parents. So he was diagnosed at 7, probably by the time he was 11. And he would go and sit down, and parents who were just new, a kid was newly diagnosed with hearing loss, he would sit down and they'd invite him in to talk about. And by then he was a star lacrosse player and he was academically great. And I think it was just one of those, like, here's a kid, like, there is a whole other world of possibility, right? And that was really, I think, great for him and just great for parents too, because, you know, we really liked just trying to understand what was coming down the pike at us.
Now, Soledad, one thing that I also appreciate about you and respect a lot about you is that you're purpose-driven with going out on your own, starting your own production company. I think that's what we really respect. And just to hear the story in which you, not just one child, you have four. That's pretty amazing. And since I've met, since I've met you, you're always on a plane, trains, and automobiles. I would just love to learn a little bit more about what drove you to go do your own thing, to start a production company. You could have gone and worked for another network. So could you give us a little insight on what drove you to do the production company? And what I like about is you feature a lot of underserved communities and people and the stories and documentaries. Can you get a little bit into that?
Definitely. I mean, I think, you know, when you run a production company, people often say you get to do your own thing. And you're like, well, within reason, right? We got to sell it. So it's not like you can just do whatever you want all the time.
Yeah.
But you do have this opportunity to opt out of the kind of stories you're not interested in doing.
Yep.
And I really, pretty early on, when I was at CNN, I remember thinking, I want to go do the stories that I can add value to. Like, I want to go to Haiti because I think I have a point of view that's going to be helpful in illuminating story. I think going to Katrina, my best friend, my kid's godmother, my producer, you know, she's from New Orleans, and we had a really good inside track on everything that was unfolding. And so we had really good coverage. I don't like being one of 99 reporters standing 2.5 miles away from the scene, all doing, you know, the chit chat. And so that was really my bar, was like, I think I can do what I want to do and work with the people I want to work with. And again, I think when you run your own thing, like, it's a, well, you guys all know, right? You're insane. The idea, if you think it's going to be easier, so no.
Definitely not.
No. But it does give you this opportunity to focus on the things that really matter to you and say, you know what? I want this to happen. I'm going to make that happen. And I do love that.
Well, I think we've learned purpose is hard. Yeah. I think that's what we've been hearing from the people we've been having on. Even our stories, we relive it. We're like, wow, why do we do these things? It is really hard to follow
purpose. It's harder. Right? Because a not purpose is really easy.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. And I think, you know, one of the things I think when you're a reporter that you're always very careful of is making sure you get the story right. Not just the broad strokes, right? The nuance that when someone says something, like, you're capturing exactly what they mean, you're clarifying. Often people, if they're nervous, they talk backwards, right? They say something, they fumble a word, and just trying to really help people to tell their story. So, you know, in a lot of ways, I think reporting has always, for me, been very purpose-driven, just getting a chance to pick, you know, again, marginalized communities that often don't get a lot of coverage. I used to always joke, like, I don't run into a lot of people on my stories most of the time, and that's fine by me. And so, yeah, I think it's just like, you just got to get it right, and you've got to help people who are not in that community understand what the story really is.
So with your production company now, I know it's a lot that's close to the vest right now, but is there anything you can share that you're excited about that we can be looking forward to that kind of, you know, touches
yeah,
you?
Yeah, we're excited. We have a documentary short that we just sold to HBO. It's called The Devil Is Busy, and it's a look at an abortion clinic in Georgia after Roe v. Wade kind of ended. And we just qualified for an Oscar with that doc, which that sounds very dramatic. It's actually not. It's just like the first bar cleared, if maybe down the road. But it sounds like a lot, right? Doesn't it sound like someone's shipping me an Oscar?
To that. That's amazing. Congrats.
Thank
that's
you.
The first
Should
step.
I give you guys my speech? Should
that's
I give
what them? I'm ready for.
Yeah, rehearse.
We're not there yet. And then we have another project that I got to EP, which is going to Netflix this fall. And it's called The Perfect Neighbor, which is a look at Stand Your Ground case in Ocala, Florida, where a woman shot her neighbor through her locked door. They've been feuding for a while. So it's shot really completely, almost completely with police body cam because the police were called to the scene so many times. So it's amazing. It's a great doc. And that doc has been going to international film festivals of late. So yeah, we've been super busy with that. It's great. I mean, it's a
amazing lot,
and it's a lot of fun. But again, I like being able to look at policy issues, whether it's abortion after a major law's basically been rescinded, or Stand Your Ground, and figure out a way to tell that story in a way that's not preachy, that's complicated and interesting, and that people, everybody, is going to want to watch it and understand. Right. So we feel pretty lucky about that.
And it's so important. I mean, these stories need to be told, and you're the absolute right person to tell that story. And that's amazing. And congrats. How good does it feel to have to come up with these ideas, to put them together, and then to sell them to air? People are going to see. I mean, that's.
Should I talk about the 643 that I did not come to fruition?
That's what people don't know, though, right? It's like you put in all this work.
That tempers your enthusiasm when you're like, but yes, it is.
But it's got to make you so proud when you actually get it across the finish line, right?
And listen, the people who do the real work, the director, the producer, the people in the field, I mean, it's so wonderful to see their great work honored. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. Well, if I was a betting man, I would bet on you all day long. I mean, you talk about, you know, 600, I know you're joking, but it's like, it's true. This whole business is about being, you know, hearing no and marching through it and figuring out ways to get to yes and being able to be resilient and keep pushing forward, especially when you're passionate about these stories, because I feel like it's so easy for people. You get told no one time and you fold up shop and you're like, okay, we got to find somebody else. But when you're passionate about something, like you are, and these important stories that should be told. I mean, it is such an accomplishment to get it on these streaming services, right? Get it in front of these big audiences. And I know I'm telling you stuff you already know, but you should be so proud of yourself and your team. That's incredible.
Yeah, we're very proud. We are very proud. Thank you. And yet again, I think when you are purpose driven, then, you know, it does feel great because you feel like this is something you've really fought for a long time. And not just the story, but the bigger story, right? The idea of this issue should be covered, or these people should be heard from, and we get to add a little bit more to that. And so I think that does really make it sweeter.
So it has been such an honor and a privilege to have you on the show. I mean, I know you and Isaac are buddies and you text all the time, but to be able to talk to you about all this stuff has been such an honor. I'm so grateful for this opportunity. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. We were so happy to have you.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Soledad.
You bet.
All right, look, if you enjoyed this show, remember, follow us on all the social media platforms, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. Follow us, share this, send this to your friends. Make sure you share the information and follow us, subscribe, and we will see you next time on Driven by Purpose.